listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
What we want.
You're listening to On the Couch,
On the Couch
with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are officially on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle, your friendly psychologist. As I always say, a little tribute to my old friend, Dr. David Viscott. It's another beautiful day here in the neighborhood. Pacific Standard Time, Los Angeles, in our fabulous studios downtown, the entertainment capital of the world. And a crazy place, too. That's why I live and work here. Anyway, this is Dr. Michelle with you, and I hope you stay tuned for the next hour because I've got a, as usual, fabulous show. And also a wonderful guest to boot. And just want to let you know, by the way, if you have questions or comments, as always, you can email me at the address here, which is hooked up to the radio station, which is DocMichelle, D-O-C Michelle at AOL.com. That's DocMichelle, D-O-C Michelle at AOL.com. Like that. Questions, comments, anything you would like to add, please come on down. I'd love to hear from you. And also, if you'd like to call in, respond to my guest today, that would be fabulous. You can do so as well. And, of course, that number, as always, Los Angeles area code is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. So we have a great show going on, as always, today. Let me ask you something out there, listeners. What would you do if you realized that your own most fundamental assumptions about yourself were wrong? How would you reinvent yourself? What do you think I'm talking about? Well, how would you change your life? How would you start to be rethinking about who you are in your 40s if you start to suspect that much of your life has been built on a lie or at least a critical misperception? Well, these are the questions that Dr. Lauren Olson, a prominent Midwestern psychiatrist, faced when he finally confronted the fact that despite almost two decades of marriage to a loving and emotionally compatible woman, he was sexually and romantically attracted to men. It's just the way it went. And it was scary. But he wrote a fabulous book, and you're going to enjoy it today. It's called Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. And it's provided for us by InGroup Press, I want to mention. And, of course, my special guest on the air is Dr. Lauren Olson. Hey, how are you?
I'm very well, Dr. Michelle. I appreciate spending some time on your couch.
Oh, that's nice. Well, you can hang out as long as you like. We're all casual here, and it's good to have you. So,
thank you.
Actually, I'm on your couch now because you're the psychiatrist. So how's that?
Well, welcome to my couch.
Great. I want to mention, too, by the way, Dr. Olson is a distinguished life fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. He's also a recipient of the Exemplary Psychiatrist Award from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And, of course, you're a dad, a grandfather. And in my intro, I discussed that you actually came out when you were 40. That was, gosh, you were like in an 18-year heterosexual marriage. And until that time, you didn't realize really you were gay, right?
I really didn't. I began to sort of have more awareness of it, perhaps in my early to mid-30s.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely, prior to that time, considered myself completely heterosexual.
How could you not know that you were gay until you were 40 years old? I mean, you know, I'm thinking, and I don't want to say sham or, you know, that's a little extreme for me, but wasn't your first marriage just kind of, did you marry someone just to protect you at the expense of your wife and children? I mean, I have a lot of gay friends, and they sort of confine, you know, themselves to a heterosexual marriage because it's, you know, better for their image. It makes them, you know, gosh, this is what I should be doing, and so.
Well, that question comes up fairly often,
yeah.
And I suppose maybe even more frequently from young gay people.
Yes.
Absolutely, my marriage was an honest commitment that both
yeah.
my wife and I shared to traditional marriage, and
right.
There was nothing that was suspicious about myself at that time at all, so
mm-hmm.
that part was easy.
Yeah.
Trying to understand how I could be basically so stupid as not to know until I was in my 30s is a fairly complicated question,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
became kind of the focus of a lot of the book. The technical word that we use in professionally is
right.
association.
Right.
And that word, the way I explain it in general, is
mm-hmm.
sort of like a child's belief in Santa Claus.
Right.
You know, a child believes it wholeheartedly, and then there begin to be facts that make the child question
sure,
it.
Sure, sure.
And then finally, suddenly the truth is overwhelming, and then the myth has to be given up. And that was kind of my experience with the whole thing. I went through a process of self-discovery.
Sure, absolutely. You know, I have, like I said, a lot of male friends, actually, who are gay, and it's true. I find that in their almost midlife area, you know, they're kind of realizing that they're not happy.
Yes.
Because they have been
yes.
living lives that are conforming to society. And a lot of the fellows I have two in mind really didn't know they were gay. I mean, they participated in, you know, heterosexual activities and had women, and but, you know, there was always something there that was sort of telling them that, I mean, there wasn't this, you know, flamboyant need to have sex with, I mean, I'm just going to put it out there, you know, with the guys in middle school or high school, or there wasn't this wild attraction going on. There was more this, I don't feel like I fit in all the time, but I'm really cool with dating girls and going out with girls. But there wasn't this sexual passion going on that much.
I think that's the hard thing for people to understand,
mm-hmm.
is that it's possible for us to erect such a profound barrier within
yeah.
our brains
yes.
between what's acceptable and what's unacceptable.
Yeah.
And when I was, you know, I had adolescent same-sex experiences like
right.
most adolescent boys
sure,
do.
Sure, sure.
But when I began to date in high school, and there was something that just didn't feel quite like it was right there. And,
right.
And when other guys were talking about women's breasts and stuff,
right.
you know, the same fascination wasn't there for me that
right.
it was for others.
Yeah.
But I grew up in the 50s, and in that time, there was really no reference point for
oh, right.
me to
exactly.
understand any of this.
Right. I was just, you know, not to get too personal, but were you kind of fearful also that your parents might suspect something when you were, like, older? Let's just, well, you didn't discover that you were gay really until you were around 40-ish.
So. Yes, that's true. And I wasn't afraid because I didn't know.
Right.
I had one experience when I was in medical school where I went to St. Louis with my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in an antique shop. I mean, here are some clues that I became obvious
oh, you're so
later
funny.
On in my life, but weren't so much at this time. But I was in an antique shop, and the owner was a very young, attractive gay man,
mm-hmm.
and he came over, and he began to fondle me a little. And my reaction was, he's clumsy. You know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
right,
right. And, you know, I continued to talk with him for a while, and he came over and he touched me again in a very personal way, and it still didn't dawn on me. And the third time it happened, it was like, oh my God, you know, what's just happened? And
right.
instead of sort of thinking that I had broadcast any message to him, I thought he had made a terrible mistake. And of course, I was angry and thought, how could he do this kind of thing? So
right,
that was
right.
Actually the first adult
mm-hmm.
sort of same-sex kind of contact that
right.
I had that
right.
might have been a clue that I was broadcasting some message that I didn't know I was.
That's interesting, too, isn't it? By the way, folks, if you just tuned in, I'm talking with Dr. Lauren Olson. He's a psychiatrist in private practice in Des Moines. And, of course, his new book is finally out, Letting Go of Living Straight. It's a really terrific read, by the way, Lauren. I really enjoyed it. And
well, thank you very much.
It's very, you're a psychiatrist. You're a medical doctor. And, you could have written this very clinically and technically, but you didn't. It's very easy to read, and it's fascinating and helps a lot of people, as well as mental health professionals like myself, really learn a lot more about the struggle with sexual identity. I mean, it was really a fascinating story, and I love it. It's very emotional as well. I found myself really... really saying, this guy's got such a handle on his own emotions and feelings. And, the way you open up to other readers and help them discover their own sense. So what can some folks learn from your book about the struggle with sexual identity and, how gay adults are better understood?
Well, I think there's one theme that is pretty constant throughout the book, and that is that the label gay is very complex and sometimes inappropriately applied.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's my belief that only the person themselves can identify themselves as gay. But what we hear is, like when Senator Craig got caught in the bathroom in Minneapolis, everybody said, oh, he's got to be gay. And, but when he made his public statement, he said, I'm not gay. I never have been gay.
Right.
And I understand that from a different perspective because I've lived that life. He and I are the same age.
Right.
Grew up in the same kind of environment.
Right, right.
And I think that he actually... would be horrified to think that he was gay. Because the word gay for many men like myself, many men who are not out publicly, that label carries such a negative stereotype.
Right.
And we tend to socially think of that word as associated with all of the sort of very effeminate, sort of extreme kinds of behaviors. But many men who have sex with men really abhor the label of being gay. And so that theme is explored throughout the book.
Interesting.
It can be sexual attraction. It can be sexual fantasy. It can be behavior. But ultimately, being gay is a sexual identity.
Yes, absolutely. And like you just mentioned, we thought about the scandals about politicians and, other celebrities involved in same-sex affairs. And they're continuing to deny their gay because of the stigma, because of the judgment.
Yes.
And of course, like what's fascinating, too, is, about in psychiatry, about the psychological what that means when someone is at the forefront of anti-gay politics, and they're actually...
Yeah, that's right.
Right, right. And what is that, reaction formation? What do we call that? Is that what we call it?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. When we go to one extreme to prove that something is not true. So,
right.
And that was definitely the case, I think, for a lot of these politicians and other people who were making decisions, that they want to separate themselves as far as they possibly can.
Sure.
From the idea that they might be gay. So, unfortunately, they enact policies which are very harmful to us. And so, on an individual basis, it's a struggle. And I think understandable, but some of their behaviors are, frankly, difficult to forgive.
Exactly. I hear you. What's interesting is living here in Los Angeles and in the Hollywood realm and like I said in my intro, we are crazy. A lot of people live here, and it's probably a good thing that you're living in a nice, peaceful area in Des Moines, which is a lovely city, by the way.
It is.
It really is. But what's really sad, what I find sad, is that there are a lot of actors who, I know are gay. But they do have this facade of being playboys and, dating all these women in the media. And they have, these guys can't go out of their homes without having paparazzi sitting in cars. And it would be really tough. And it's such a sad thing for me because of the, the image that the media has portrayed with a lot of these folks. Women, too. I think
Absolutely.
More women are cooler about coming out. But, they have to keep this facade of this macho guy who's heterosexual, and I think that's really difficult.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, true in acting. It's true in sports.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about sort of attaining and maintaining this macho image
yeah.
that is required by society. And somehow it's hard for people to accept that a man can be a real man and still be gay.
Right.
And they have to think about their fans and the response they're going to get if they self-identify. And so there's some understandability to it.
Sure.
In terms of the profession. I had a lot of those same concerns when I first came out. I came
right.
out in about 86, and I took a job as a medical director of a large hospital
right.
in Des Moines.
Yeah.
And at that time, there were very few physicians who self-identified publicly
sure.
as gay.
Sure, exactly.
And I had left my family. I had financial responsibilities. I had a lot of other responsibilities.
Sure.
And I was really afraid that if my sexuality was discovered, that it would undermine my ability to provide
sure.
and take care of those responsibilities.
Sure, sure. I bet you were.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, when you actually, you know, finally made your decision to come out and, you know, make your changes and move on with your life, was it a feeling of sadness? How did you feel? Was it a finally I've found really my reality and my happiness in life?
Well, there certainly was that feeling. I mean, there was, you know, when I finally made the step and said, I'm gay, there was a sense of freedom.
Yes.
And coming home about it.
Mm-hmm.
I had joined, prior to leaving my wife, I had joined a support group for
Good.
Gay fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And when the experience I had in that was to meet other men that I admired, I respected, I
yes.
enjoyed them. They were a diverse group of men.
Mm-hmm.
So it removed a lot of the stereotypes that I had in my head prior to that time.
Great.
And it was very helpful to me, and so there was that. But, you know, I had all the traditional values that most of us have about wanting to be a good husband, a good father, having a very traditional family and career.
Sure.
And there was a lot of loss connected with that, and a lot of that is what held me in the marriage for a while, even after I recognized that I
yeah.
was gay.
Yeah. So what kind of information or help or counsel would you offer someone who believed that their friend or their son or daughter or brother or sister was a closeted gay and about to enter into a gay marriage or a heterosexual marriage, rather? I mean, what kind of counsel would you give them?
Well, that's a tough question because, you know, the denial can be so strong that to say, I think you're gay, to someone who absolutely doesn't think so,
right.
Can create a great deal of anxiety for them.
Yes.
So part of the response depends on how well do you know the person, how well do they know
yes.
that you can be there and you can hear their story. And I probably would approach it indirectly and not use the word gay, but, you know,
yes.
Do you have any doubts about this marriage? Any second thoughts, any kinds of questions that you're having about this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, many of them are going to push ahead even so because they really just don't want to accept what's true, and they will enter a marriage. Many of the men that I know that are married and have been through this
sure.
Made their commitment fully believing that once they were married, all those feelings would disappear. They'd finally have a regular sexual partner and that it would go away. Some, as myself, just didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really true.
Mm-hmm.
Very, you know, it's a difficult, and you know, a lot of the counseling too would apply to heterosexual couples as well. You know, what are some of the deal breakers? What are, you know, in terms of, well, is this person right for you? You know, you have to approach it very carefully.
Yeah, I think that yeah. those questions and approaching it very much in that in the way that you're suggesting makes
mm-hmm.
a lot of sense.
Yeah, thank you. By the way, if you just tuned in, everybody, on LA Talk Radio's Dr. Michelle's on the couch here. I'm speaking to Dr. Lauren Olson. He's a psychiatrist in private practice in Des Moines. Of course, author of the latest book, Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. And he discovered he was gay after 40 years. He had been in a marriage for a while, had children, and, you know, chose to live the lifestyle that he truly, truly wanted to because this is who he was. And we're about encouraging people to take a look at their truth within them, I think. And, you know, what things are they feeling and what are they fearing from society? And possibly the freedom you can feel from actually coming out and not living a lie all your life. And this is a great book to help you out with that, folks, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I think, you know, part of the other message in the book is that, you know, we inherit a value system mm-hmm. from our parents and, yeah. and society, and that we have the power to deconstruct that and yeah. reconstruct it in a way which is consistent with what we really believe about ourselves. And a lot of people don't know that they have the capacity to do that.
Yes.
And so often what we do is we make our self-esteem contingent on approval from other people, and it just doesn't work in the long run.
It's so true.
We mm-hmm. have to be authentic and true to ourselves, and that's when you feel good about yourself.
I agree. And with any kind of a client or patient, as you know, there's so much stuff and old garbage in the mind that people have bought into about who they are and their identity from parents who were ignorant and, you know, maybe didn't have the tools because of their upbringing about how to, you know, be open and encourage their children to express their own identity and feelings. And you know, there's so much judgment, and of course there's abuse and there's fear. I think that the underlying factor here from many fathers is fear. You know, my son could be gay. You know, what are we changing? Is this society hopefully changing? I mean,
well, you know, it certainly is true that it's a different society than I grew up in. And I mean, 2 years ago, my partner and I have been together 24 years, 2 years
yes.
ago in Iowa, of all places, we were able to get married.
That's
and
lovely.
So that's something I never could have imagined
yes.
many years ago.
Yes.
On the other hand, there are still significant pockets of within our culture where it isn't acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
I think about sort of some religious communities, some cultural communities, some immigrant communities. You know, they're all places where all of those old barriers to coming out are still present.
And, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the concern about the deaths of teenagers and how many of them have died. Yeah.
Right.
So it's quite variable, but there is, you know, more public exposure, of course, and presented in fairly normal ways most of the time. It's not quite so traditionally stereotypical behavior that we used to see.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, here on many of the networks within the psychological and psychiatric community, people, you know, where they're trying to find referrals. And, I mean, there are a lot more open practitioners who are treating, it's the LGBT community, as we call it, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual
uh-huh.
community. And I think there are a lot more practitioners who are really getting this and learning more about this community and or are themselves and have been stuck in that particular mode all their lives, and they finally learned, you know, how to come out and feel good about it. So I think this
so
is a positive.
When I was in med school, we had that was at the time of the original diagnosis of psychopathic deviancy.
Oh,
so that was kind of the literature I was exposed
I
to
know.
At that time.
What was that with the DSM, right? What was that?
Yeah,
you're gay, you're
evolved,
a deviant,
you know?
You're a psychopathic, what?
Yeah, and I read that and I thought, well, I mean, because I probably was reading it because I was curious
well, sure.
About it, and I thought, well, I'm not deviant, I'm not like that, I don't feel ill, I don't feel sick, I don't feel crazy. Instead of saying maybe there's an alternative, what I chose to do was say, well, then I can't be gay, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I don't meet the criteria that's listed in the DSM, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Then later on, and when I was in my residency, I saw a therapist, and that's actually when I had my first man-on-man contact as an adult, and I was in my early 30s, and it was an experience where I knew what the man intended, but I sort of allowed him to let me drink too much. I think frankly, I intended to drink too much, so I'd have an excuse to experience this. But that was the first time as an adult that I dealt with it. And then I had to go back and talk to my supervisor, who was also a therapist for me.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
He didn't know how to deal with it either.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Well, no, you know, it's like, this is something new.
Yeah. And he was trained in a psychoanalytic tradition, so he had lots of reasons not to accept that behavior.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, it must have been, you know, so difficult, and I, you know, commend you for being so honest, because it must be so difficult for a dad to explain to his kids and his wife that the divorce isn't about emotional, you know, compatibility. It's about sexual identity. I mean, that must have been so difficult for you.
It was, and it was a process over time. And in fact, my wife and I have a very good relationship, and just recently visited about this. And her initial reaction, of course, was to think I was going through a midlife crisis, and that I would get through it and recognize what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, for most spouses who are in that position, the next thing is to blame themselves. I wasn't a good enough wife. I didn't do it right.
Oh,
if I'd only been a better sexual partner or whatever, this wouldn't have happened. But, you know, over the course of time, she recognized that this was something that I didn't choose.
Right.
And she knew that I wouldn't choose it and accepted it as that. And it changed. The kids, I think, went through a different kind of a transition. I think in many ways, the divorce may have been harder than discovering I was gay.
Right.
They had, you know, they were in a younger generation and had some exposure to what it meant to be gay, although not a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the divorce was, of course, very painful for them. And then their initial questions were sort of, does this mean I might be gay?
Yes.
Later on, it was sort of, can I bring my friends to my dad's house if he's got a man there with them? Will will their parents allow them to come to his house with me?
Right.
And then as they began to date, then they began to say, well, you know, how is my boyfriend going to respond to finding out my father's gay? And so they went through a real transition over a period of time. They were about 10 and 13 at the time I came out or left the family. And so they were at the age when they were just beginning to explore their own sexuality too.
Right. You know, on that particular subject, your ex-wife recently told you that she's getting married, her husband to be. You're right.
Mm-hmm. She is married
is
now,
she
but
finally,
just recently.
That's great. But I read that your wife told you that she and her new husband, they wouldn't get married in a church that didn't welcome gays, homosexuals.
That's right.
So, you
that's
know,
right.
Hey, but there are a lot of them out there. So, I mean, she is really has learned a lot and moved on with her life and, of course, loves you and always will, I'm sure, in the, you know, your life together. But she learned
a lot. Yes, I think we can say that we still love each other, although not in the way that we had originally thought it would be. But we're still a family. We're still we've incorporated each other's spouses into a larger family, and I think that's a message that I think it's possible to achieve. It takes some time and some work.
Sure, it does. It does take some work. It takes some emotional exploring. And on that note also, I have a client who came in a short while ago, was telling me that her man found out that he was gay and took up, you know, with a lover. And he's been with that person for quite a while, actually. And my client said to me, this woman, she said, you know what? What really helped me is that when a man leaves a woman for another woman, you're always thinking, gee, I wonder what she looks like. I wonder what her body looks like. I wonder how sexy she is. She said, you know, when my guy left me for another guy, I, of course, gave up completely because I couldn't compete.
It's difficult to compare yourself on any level with someone of the opposite sex. Very difficult indeed.
And it made her a lot more at ease, actually. She said, you know, I'm really happy for him. You know, it really devastated me because I was, he was my man and I loved him.
Is,
you know, we built a life together. But, you know, she said, on the other hand, this has really helped me there's no way that I can even compete with this, and you have to let it go and say, I wish you love, and I allow you to find who you truly are and be happy. So that's
I think sometimes, Michelle, that in the initial phase, there's a fair amount of anger because of feeling like you've been betrayed.
Sure.
You know, that somehow you were lied to and deceived. And so sometimes before you can get to that point, you have to get rid of the anger that you feel about that.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just simply don't want to let go of the anger. They'll hang on even in a negative way if they have to. But
that's true.
You can have a friendship with that person if you get the anger out of the way first.
Sure. I think that's, and it is difficult to do. If you just tuned in to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle here, I want to let you know my special guest is Dr. Lauren Olson. He's the author of the book Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. He discovered he was gay. He, of course, was married for a very long time. When he was 40 years old, he chose to really explore his homosexuality and said, this is truly who I am, and moved on with his life and actually wrote a really wonderful book to help readers understand about the transition, about the feelings, about the pain, what to experience, and of course what other friends, family members are going to probably feel and how they're going to react to it. It's really your story, though, which is very special.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's talk about something else, because this was a part in the book that I really, this was really moving for me, and it's very scary, but not long after you came out, a close friend was murdered, and, these hate crimes, they still exist as a real threat to homosexuals. So, are there
any... a difficult time, Michelle.
Yeah.
In fact, it was one of the fathers in the gay support group I was talking about earlier.
Oh, my gosh.
And he had children about the same age as mine. And he kind of was a mentor to me. He kind of taught me how to become a part of the gay community. And his daughters and my daughters socialized, and he was farther along in the process of coming out than I, and so I really looked up to him in that respect.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He came out of a relationship and was sad and alone, and picked up a couple of guys and was stabbed to death by them.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was a horrible time.
That's horrific. It really is. It's it's so sad that it still exists in our society.
Yes, yes, and the tragedy, it was odd because the two men who murdered him have websites, which I found sort of incredible that the murderers in prison have websites, but and both of them have subsequently married and become born again Christians, which is sort of another story. But
there you go.
He was talking in his trial of the murderer about how justified he felt in doing this because gay men really didn't deserve to live. That was what he believed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a risk. People, it's risk for heterosexuals or anyone. You meet somebody in a bar, you go home with them, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And a lot of... of course, he was more experienced, but a lot of men who are coming out of midlife don't know how to handle that situation. They're sort of new again to dating.
Sure.
They're probably had a few drinks and they're sexually excited and their judgment is impaired and they take risks that they might not take otherwise. So there is a significant risk there.
Sure there is. So how would you advise dads and granddads of young kids on the best way to come out, to them? I mean, it's kind of difficult, isn't it, Lauren?
Yes, it is. I mean, for parents, I think in my case, my kids, when I came out to them, they already had picked up enough clues that they were aware of something, and many kids will already have some suspicions about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think part of it is that when men who are emotionally connected to each other are together, they behave in ways that they're not even aware of that are distinctly different.
Mm-hmm.
They may stand closer together. They may touch more. They may sort of give away clues to other people that there is a level of intimacy that's generally not exposed among men.
Yes.
And I think my kids picked up on those kinds of things as well.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do with sort of looking at what are the ages of the children and, you know, to not tell them more than they want to know. In my case, it's sort of, if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. It's really about two men loving each other, and it's not any different than when a man and a woman loves each other. And the sexually, I mean, I still wouldn't talk to my daughters about what I do sexually, but most men and women wouldn't either.
Well, of course. No, that's right. Lauren, you know, we were talking about religion. You know, you said the fellows who attacked that gentleman who you knew and killed him, actually.
Yes.
They became born-again Christians. And one of your daughters, I was reading in the book, she's a conservative Christian. So how does she reconcile her religious beliefs with the fact that her dad's gay?
Well, I think it's difficult for her in some ways, although she's a big defender and we're very close.
Good.
Our major arguments would come up in terms of sort of the specifics of religious beliefs. And through some counseling of my own, what I learned was, you know, if we can talk about sort of the meaning of scriptures or the Quran or the Torah or whatever, if you talk about it in a more general sense, what is the meaning of this?
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't start arguing about was, in fact, the world created in 7 days, and was it a Jonah swallowed by a fish or a whale? Or, you know, if you, it's when you start getting into all that.
Yes.
But that you really begin to argue. But if you know, if you talk in terms of that this is really about loving one another and experience the love of God or whoever it is that you believe in, and that's what the meaning of this is all about, then you don't get into any problems.
Yes, that's right. By the way, if you just tuned in on the couch here with Dr. Michelle, I'm talking with my guest, who's an author of the latest book, Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. It's Dr. Lauren Olson, psychiatrist. He's in private practice in Des Moines, and of course, he decided to come out of the closet when he was 40 years old, realizing that he was indeed gay, and start a life for himself after he'd have been married for many years and had children. Now, of course, he's a granddad. So it's really a lovely book, and it really does help a lot of people understand, you know, the journey of letting go of living straight. So I think that there's a lot of truth in here, and I think that if you are, you know, contemplating going, you know, to open yourself up to, you know, letting go of living straight, if you would like to announce that you're finally out, then this is a good guide for you, and it's really informative about some of the pitfalls you're going to find and expect along the way as well. And you say in your book, Lauren, that gay men and women, they do waste a lot of energy hating. You know, there's a lot of hate within a homophobic culture, and you blame it, you know, for the guilt and shame that they feel. It's tough. Are they really justified? And what?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, one of the things that I said in the book that has raised a few eyebrows is that I don't like the word homophobia very much. And the reason I say that is, you know, we struggled as gay men and women for so long to try and take away being labeled as deviant and defective that in some ways it seems unjust to call those who oppose us as being phobic and therefore sick. And I think also if we look at the people, the community on a spectrum, there's one extreme of the spectrum that is extremely conservative, and probably they're not open to discussion. And perhaps homophobia maybe applies in that case. I don't know. But on the other hand, there's extreme liberals who won't even talk to anyone else about it. And, but in the middle, there's you know, maybe 70% of people whose attitudes can be changed. And we mm-hmm. see that moving in a different direction. And I think that's where we need to expose our energies, is to try and talk to them about what our lives are like and let
right.
them know us as real people. But
sure.
somehow this idea of calling names is, I think, destructive to any kind of meaningful discourse.
Yes.
And when I was growing up, and the word that I used in my book to describe my mother and my stepfather
right.
was homo naive, you know.
Yes,
they weren't, I mean, they didn't have any strong, hateful
yeah.
feelings toward us.
Yes.
But they didn't know anything about it. They had no exposure to it. And
yeah.
I think there are a lot of people who really don't know what it means for us to be gay, and we have a responsibility to communicate that message in a way that's meaningful and understandable. And I think sometimes calling people homophobic only alienates them and interferes with any kind of meaningful conversation.
I agree with you. I really do. And you talk about, you say in your book, where tolerance of gays is higher, HIV rates are lower. Can you discuss this a little more and the public health implications of men who have sex with guys and yet they're denying that they're gay? I mean, there's a real problem here, Lauren.
Yes, it is a very significant problem. A study was conducted at Emory University, and I don't know if it's been published yet or not, but it is out there. I think the title of the study is HIV Intolerance.
Yeah.
And what the researchers found, and it was done by a couple of economists, they found that where tolerance was low, that what it did was to push men who had sexual attraction into underground sexual activities. And
right.
many times they were more engaged in unprotected sex and high-risk sexual behaviors.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
And where tolerance was higher,
right.
they were more apt to receive education about protective things that they could do during sex, and they
right.
were more open to it.
Right.
So it has a very negative impact. There was also a study, Michelle, in
mm-hmm.
Done in Oregon of adolescent teenagers, and they it was a very good study. It was I think about 8,000 juniors in high school, I think. What they found in that study was that even controlling for the usual risk factors like depression and
mm-hmm.
Too much drinking
right.
and bullying and those kinds of things, even control when those factors were eliminated as risk factors, that a negative social environment increased the risk of suicide attempts by 20%.
Wow.
So the environment we live in does, in fact, have very significant public health issues.
Sure it does. And of course, also, like you said earlier, with a lot of the teens and young adults, with the electronic media and the social medias, attempting to come out, you know, they could be destroyed, and the suicides that have come up in this country because kids, as I call them, of course they're kids, they're coming
yeah.
out of the closet, they're having, you know, the courage to do that, but a lot of time, or there's a suspicion, and there's
yes.
what I found is I have a son who recently came out of high school, and there is still such a stigma about that. Of course, my son is very open and cool about it and has gay friends, and he's wonderful and loving and supportive of his gay friends. But he has explained to me how in high schools that there is still, there's a sense of making fun of gay women and men.
Yes.
And it's horrendous, some of the stories
yes,
he would
yes.
tell me.
Yeah, it was, you know, I look back at that time of my life, and as we were discussing about politicians earlier, you know, I was not particularly gender nonconforming.
Yeah.
I looked like most of the other guys in my class.
Right.
But I remember very distinctly, even in a very small school,
mm-hmm.
picking out guys who has behavior with
uh-huh.
effeminate. That time the label we used was sissy, there wasn't faggot and
oh, right.
and
right.
all that kind of stuff
no.
now. But anything that allowed a person to be perceived as something less than a man, we jumped on it and were unmerciful, I think. And I feel responsible for that because I didn't stand up for it. And I know that there are kids now who want to stand up for it, but don't because they're afraid that somehow that's going to implicate.
Yeah.
Somehow, as if they're going to be contaminated by defending someone who's gay.
Right. No. Exactly. I mean, when you know, that's the whole thing, too, with middle school and high school. It's all about social acceptance. It's all about,
absolutely.
You know, popularity or being liked. And, you know, that's just a normal phase with the teen. But it's really sad.
Sometimes a phase that never ends.
Oh, you're right. You're so right.
Certainly adult.
It's really true. By the way, my guest today is Dr. Lauren Olson, psychiatrist, author of the latest book, Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. It's a terrific book about his journey when he was 40 years old. He discovered that he was gay and decided to come out to his family. He was married for a long time. He has children and grandchildren. And he's moved on with his life. And, of course, you've been with your partner, your husband now, for
24 years we were together. And,
that's wonderful.
Iowa's Supreme Court said that discrimination in marriage was unconstitutional about April of, I guess, 3 years ago. So we were married a little. Shortly after that, we began to make plans, although there was certainly a time in my life when I thought that would never be a possibility.
Well, you know, there's a lot of states that are still not allowing that as well. And
I would like to remind you that I was ahead of California.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, we don't often we were not often able to say that.
No, it's true. Good for you. It's really true. Oh, I know. It really is. Yeah. So, Lauren, what advice do you have for men who are contemplating coming out, but they fear losing the people and things that matter most to them, no matter what age they are?
Well, the truth is you do lose some. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also quite true that the fears of what you will lose are much less than you imagine them to be, and that you can't possibly imagine the good that's going to come from it on a personal level. And I think also to say that it is possible to that many of those losses may not be permanent, that you may be able to recapture some of those relationships as you go on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always the losses loom much larger than the gains.
Yes. I would think, Lauren, that years of keeping your true feelings in about your sexuality would just be tormenting. I would imagine that it would just be so difficult, like any other, you know, major lie that you have to keep for society. It would just be such a horrible thing. But then that whole decision about who am I going to lose in my life? What kind of, how is it going to affect my job, my coworkers,
In the book, I use the metaphor of it being like an abscess tooth. You know that it is so painful, and you know that secret once it's released is going to give you some relief, but it's so frightening to touch it expose it. And it is the other thing I think about that, Michelle, too, is that if you're a gay man. Like that in midlife, you feel like there's no one else you can talk to. You can't say, I think I might be gay to anyone, because they're going to assume automatically that you must be, or you wouldn't even consider it.
Right.
And so it's very lonely, and you feel like you're the only one in the world who's going through the situation, even though many of us know that there's lots and lots of men in the same situation.
Right.
The Internet has been helpful in that regard because it has allowed some sense of community, but it's so sexualized that it's hard to find sort of good, honest conversations about what's it like, what are the losses, what are the gains, mm-hmm. what's the impact on your children, you know, those kinds of questions. It's hard to find that because anytime you search for something about sure. mature gay men, you're going to get all these XXX sites come up.
Yeah, that's right. And I encourage clients who I have to really go into a support group. There are a lot of wonderful gay support groups who you can feel safe with and who you can
yes.
express your feelings, and there are lovely mentors out there as well, and see a therapist who you might feel, you know, comfortable with, who has had experience or is gay themselves and understands that whole process of trying to come out and the fears involved in that too.
Yes, so. I think that that's important to try and get some sense of the therapist's feelings about that, because mm-hmm. The therapist can actually point them in the wrong directions as well.
Yeah.
And increase the guilt and shame they're
sure.
already feeling. So
exactly.
The clients have a right to interview the therapist before they make a decision to enter treatment.
Yeah.
And should do that in any case.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, listen, Lauren, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Real quick, we do have CBS News coming up, but how can people get in contact with you, get a hold of your book?
The book is available through Amazon mm-hmm. now. Barnes & Noble has it listed in their mm-hmm. online, and hopefully we'll have it in the stores soon as well.
Terrific.
And I do have a blog. It's called magneticfire.com. It's
nice.
All one word, and I'd be happy to hear from people there as well.
Terrific. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Lauren.
Oh, thank you.
Olson.
It's been a great pleasure.
Oh, you're terrific. Really, really interesting interview. Dr. Lauren, by the way, is a psychiatrist in private practice. He's still in Des Moines doing his thing. And, of course, author of the latest book, finally out, Letting Go of Living Straight. Been a pleasure having you on the show. Take good care of yourself, and hopefully we'll talk soon. I look forward to your next book.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
All right, bye-bye. Lauren, take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. This is Dr. Michelle with you, and I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you have any questions or comments, you can email me at docmichelle, docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. Also, of course, you can check out my website right here. Link on the LA Talk Radio website. Love to hear from you if you'd like. All right, we're out. Do take care of yourself first so you'll be great for other people. That is what I always say, and I mean it. Have a great week. I'll talk to you next Friday. Bye-bye.